Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Security Nation. I am Kyle Flaherty. So today's special treat, actually got to speak with a gentleman who I met at a summit conference last November, our United Summit here at Rapid7, Jack Voth. Jack is the head of IT and security at a company called Algenol, A-L-G-E-N-O-L. Go look it up. They're doing some really cool stuff. And he talks about the passion that he has for what they're doing at Algenol to really help the environment. And it's something that kind of helps propel him to do things. But passion is what comes to mind as I sat there talking to Jack, not just about security, but about continuously learning the way he looks to hire people in security, his recommendations in terms of your security career, how you get into it, and just the way he actually got into the industry itself. It's highly personal, and it was something that I thank him a lot for opening up and expressing a lot of this stuff that I think a lot of us have of why we work in this industry. It is personal, and it has to be to continue to do the job that we all do, no matter what our role is within security in general. So Jack Voth of Algenol, fantastic guest today, and I look forward to hearing more from all of you in episode 21 of Security Nation.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
Yeah, it's not even that cold here, but I'm still complaining. No matter what, it's like 50. Actually, I shouldn't complain. Or no, it's 40 something. So one of the things that I actually wanted to kind of start with was, you know, one of the big takeaways I had from our conversation at United back in November, I guess it was. At this point, was, you know, when you talked about, you know, Algenol and IP and protecting it and just, I don't know, the pressure that folks like yourselves are under all the time.
Right.
I get to the point where I'm also like, all right, so why do you do it? Like what, you know, our COO always talks about, like, what puts your 2 feet on the floor every day and gets you pumped to go in and continue to defend, you know, against all these people who are trying to grab your stuff?
Right. Grab my stuff. Right. Well, first of all, I have a great passion for what Algenol is doing. So if anybody's out there, whoever they work for, I hope they have a great passion for the company and or product that they sell. Fortunately for Algenol, or for the people that work for Algenol, we are trying to create some very sustainable green technology. And one of the things that we do is carbon capture, carbon mitigation, carbon capture, whatever the flavor of the day is. So I have a great passion in trying to make my little piece of the small puzzle out there to help with the environment. Mm-hmm. Along those lines, Algenol has a lot of intellectual property that allows us to mitigate carbon and grow algae. So I almost take it personally. Well, I do take it personally when individuals try to break into our network to get some of our intellectual property, because I just have a strong passion for what we're doing here.
Yeah. And, you know, in looking at your background, you know, the approach and getting into security, how was, like, you know, obviously you didn't always work for Algenol, but
correct.
I'm sure you always had passion about what you were doing. But what kind of led you from, you know, the realm of kind of maybe IT and whatnot into more of the security?
22 years ago. At the time, my son was in his mid-teens and got on an IRC chat with a quote-unquote 22-year-old blonde bombshell.
Oh, I see where this is going. It is personal.
It is personal. So as it turns out, and then it gets a little scary, as it turns out, it was a 40-year-old pedophile who only lived three blocks from us. Over the course of the next 18 months, give or take, that person stalked my family, actually broke into my house a couple of times, and the police couldn't catch him for one reason or another. Sure. Finally, one night he made a mistake, and myself and one of the other neighbors caught him. And let's just say when the police showed up, he needed to be ambulatoried out of there.
Yeah.
But ever since then, I take information security and cybersecurity very personal.
Thank you for sharing that. That is a crazy and, you know, a fortunate story, at least from the end result, although I can't imagine what it was like for your family. But I can see why you take it so personally and so passionately. You know, I wonder often, and I would just be interested, since you've been doing this now for a while, do you think in general, not everyone has that type of story, and not everyone works for an Elginol that maybe is doing something that is, you know, helping the environment, something that's very kind of altruistic and big and important. But in our industry, in the security industry in general, are we more... you know, are we more passionate than we were? Have we lost some of that because of, you know, it's always the breach of the day. It's always vendor FUD, which I want to talk about, like all of this stuff. Are we beat down? Like from your perspective on high inside of security as an industry, where do you put our kind of our level of passion?
Well, I have spoken with quite a few people in the last 18 months, 2 years, 3 years that are in this industry, and I can tell you the vast majority of them still have passion. Mm. Now, the one, shall we say, discouraging portion of it is there are so many attack vectors out there that so many actors are exploiting that it's difficult to keep up with it all. Mm. When I used to, years ago, I used to teach cybersecurity for EC Council. And one thing that we always drove into our students' brains, and it's still true today, is as a security practitioner slash cybersecurity expert, we have to know all of the exploits of our operating systems and applications. And the bad guys, the actors, they only need to know one, right? So they have a huge advantage over us. But I tell them, and I used to tell my students, and I tell my guys today, I said, we can look at this one of two ways. And I tell this to my stepson as well, because he's getting into running, and I used to run quite a bit. When you run a marathon, you can look at the marathon in one of two ways. You can say, hey, I got 26 miles to go. Or you can say, woohoo, I only got 26 miles to go. Right? I mean, it's a mentality.
Right.
So security guys, well, I tell them the same thing. I said, you can look at it one or two ways. You can say, there's a lot of bad actors out there. Or you can say, hey, there could be more bad actors out there, and we're going to protect our network with what the best means that we have. And we stay passionate every day.
Right. Yeah. And I think that you bring up an interesting point, too, of at least I've found, having worked in the security industry now for about 20 years, we used to be, I don't know, this is my personal opinion, so I'd like to hear what you think. But
yeah,
it used to be a real insular community. Obviously, it's grown for a variety of reasons, and sometimes good reasons, sometimes bad reasons. But the idea of being a teacher, like you said that word, like that really resonated. It wasn't just that maybe you're a mentor, or maybe like you go out and you teach. And I feel like that has not been lost in this industry. We continue to teach each other, whether it's at a conference or whether it's, you know, at SANS or like, you know, more formal teaching, whatever it is. I think that there's still a passion to share, which that at least makes me feel good in the face of all of the other stuff.
You know, that's an excellent point, and you're right. And unfortunately, I find that, and we kind of talked about this a little bit back in November, is there's the perception that there's this huge shortage of cybersecurity experts. And if you're looking for a cybersecurity expert that is an expert in every facet of cybersecurity, yes, there's probably one of those guys out there. The problem is everybody, most of the people out there don't understand how complex cybersecurity is. So it's incredibly difficult to be an expert in all facets of cybersecurity. So there's this perception that there's a shortage of cybersecurity guys. But the reality is, in any young industry, and this is a young industry, there's a learning curve. So that's why, you know, for me personally, you know, I don't need to hire somebody that's got every certificate in the world and that is a Joe genius on every appliance out there. I just need to get a guy who's willing to learn and does have some passion. Mm. A great story I have is a gentleman that used to work for me. He's now gone on and is holding a position as high as mine. I hired him 15 years ago out of a BP gas station. Just because he showed passion for computers and had the aptitude and was willing to learn. And today he's a CISO for a medical facility down here in Southwest Florida.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. So, okay. In that then, I would wonder, and you know, putting my shoes in the shoes of the listener, or my feet in the shoes of the listener here, if I'm that guy and I'm working at a gas station or I'm doing something, but I know I love computers and I know I love, I'm curious, I'm creative, I want to get out there, et cetera. And maybe, you know, maybe Jack Voth doesn't come up and get gas and I never meet him. But what do you encourage kind of that, you know, those folks to do? What communities, what, like, how to get out there either locally or kind of more nationally to help them learn and get bigger exposure to this industry?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, because I live in Southwest Florida, we don't have a whole lot of big business down here. Mm. So for the general listening crowd, what I would do is, and what I encourage anybody that I mentor and bring up is, got to get involved in the cybersecurity community one way or another. One, you can, you know, clearly you want to take some classes, try and get certified. But one of the great ways to break into either IT or cybersecurity or whatever the case may be is to find, and I only say this because I, from my personal experience, it worked very well for me, small community banks. Because they have to stay as technologically advanced as the big players, but they are willing to, because they're small, they're willing to look at the person and not just at the resume in front of them. Look at the if you look at the resume in front of you from the gentleman from BP, you would have put him on a lawnmower.
Sure.
But the fact, and that's how I got my break, quite frankly, was I was doing some work, some tech work, small local bank, only had 5 branches, needed a IT guy. So I went in, interviewed. I had no banking experience at all. But because small community banks and smaller businesses in general, they are willing to hire the person and not the resume. I got hired. The real beauty and the real learning experience from all of that is you get exposed to everything because they are very small. You have to do everything. I did phones. I did IT work. I did security work. I did everything. So if you take it as a learning experience, it's a great way to get a foothold in the industry.
Yeah, and the interesting part of that too is a lot of folks that I've talked to either on the podcast or just in general over the last 20 years, and this is almost a stupid comment, but it is something that I think is interesting as we do grow as an industry, is learning it from the IT perspective out or in, depending on, I guess, how you're looking at it, I think
right.
Gives folks a lot of advantage because, yeah, you had to know how the phone system worked, you know, let alone email and the servers and the network and all that kind of stuff. So you're already getting exposure to the threat vectors that allow you to understand what people might be looking for as a weakness inside that company.
Yeah, that's you're absolutely right. You know, it just back in the day, if you're old like me, you remember Captain Crunch.
Yeah.
He was a phone freaker, right?
Yep.
So he could take a Captain Crunch whistle and make the DTMF tones into a phone and make long distance calls for free.
Yep.
So, you know, in today's world, nobody's going to do that, but it's just things like that that gives you a little bit of insight once you get exposed to everything, right?
Mm. Well, and I think that brings up, and yeah, I wonder, it'd be nice to know how many people actually know that story who are listening, but I think that's a great corollary too to what you talked about in terms of just being creative and having passion, right?
Right.
You know, that passion was to make free long distance phone calls. But the creativity that went into that to figure that all out, you don't teach that.
Like, no, you don't.
That's just part of your DNA, which I think is pretty remarkable. So one of the things that you said actually previously, and it's something that if we didn't talk about, I feel like maybe we talked about it in person in November, but it's something I'm always interested in, and maybe it's just because of my job and what I need to do and how challenged I think we feel sometimes in security. But, you know, your whole concept of like have passion, get the best tools, like all that stuff. And like, that's, you know, that, and ultimately like that's the best you can do. But as this industry has blown up from a vendor perspective, I often wonder for someone like yourself, how do you cut through all the FUD, all of the marketing, all of the salesmanship, all of that stuff to actually figure out like what you need? What tips do you give folks to help them be more productive when it comes to actually shopping?
Oh, God. you know this as well as I do. We've been around long enough. I can tell, people can tell when you are truly passionate and when you truly believe in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That is very easily seen through. You can be, so if I know, for example, we had a threat intelligence company. Now, this is a couple years ago. We were getting a threat feed. I say threat intelligence, I use that term loosely. We were getting a threat feed from this particular company. The salesman was fine. He was fine. We had many conversations, and he left the company, went to – doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Subsequently, we started having some issues with this threat feed. When I got a hold of our new account rep, it took all of about – 2 minutes to realize that the product had degraded and the new account rep was attempting to smooge me to deflect so I wouldn't see that the product had degraded. So in that respect, that's a learning how to read people. From a purely technical perspective, you can be overwhelmed with the amount of information that can be presented to you. We have, I think, upwards to 23 separate security appliances and or systems in our network, looking and prodding and poking and sending me all this information. The one thing that security people have to do, and this becomes incredibly difficult in large organizations, is they really need to know their networks inside and out, and they need to know their personnel, which is I'll call it probably not a paradigm shift, but a different thought process. Because let's just take a large bank. They have a security department, and there's no possible way that a security department of 20 people can know 30,000 employees. They just can't do it. Mm. But when I was consulting years ago, I did a couple of gigs for some rather large banks, and this was one of the quandaries that we ran into. So what we ended up doing, what in the the final product was you can't, first of all, you can't have a centrally located security team. The security teams need to be almost as geographically dispersed as your company. So if you're a bank and you have branches in 50 states, you can't have a security team in New York City, because the security team in New York City has no clue what the people are doing in California, because you will always get false positives. And if you spend your entire day tracking down false positives, you're going to miss the real stuff. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, some of the good, better actors out there create false positives as a ruse, right? That's part of their MO.
Yeah.
So they'll create a ruse and you'll go off down that rabbit hole. And meanwhile, he's over here pulling lollipops out of your back pocket. So that was, you know, that is just something that we have over the years have learned that, you know, that's why some companies are coming up with, instead of a CISO, they may have a CISO, but they'll also have a BISO, or they'll have a regional information security officer or something to that effect, where they're starting to geographically disperse their security teams so they can know the local people and know that I see that Harry logged on at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. Well, Harry logs on at 3 a.m. because Harry's kind of weird that way.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know Harry, then you're going to spend 2 hours figuring out why Harry logged on at 3 a.m. And the reality is that's what he does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's funny that you started with Threat Intel, which I think we were just talking about this yesterday, my team and I, around how that's one of those buzzwords that just has blown up.
Right.
And now, and when that happens, and hey, this is on folks like myself, right? As product marketers, as technical marketers, it's like, you know, we come up with these things and we push them to their limits, and then people get, you know, then you get eye rolls because you've marketed so much, or people have marketed improperly, or whatever it is.
Right. Exactly.
And listen, I'm not going to name names, and I've probably done it myself. So, you know, that's life. And then you kind of ended with user behavior, you know, and I think about, you know, with RSA coming up in a couple of weeks, the amount of booths I'm going to see that say, you know, we're taking bets actually here. Like, how many times will we see artificial intelligence, threat intel, machine learning, and, you know, just playing buzzword bingo? Because it's so, I mean, it's even hard for us to figure out how do we rise above that noise. But I think, you know, part of it is just being knowledgeable and being honest with what you know and don't know.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, one of the tougher things, and we experience that here at Algernon quite a bit, is know when to leave your ego at the door.
Oh, interesting.
You know, when you are talking to somebody and they are supposedly supposed to be an expert, then let them talk.
Right.
My mom always told me, you can learn a lot by just shutting up and listening.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, and obviously you guys are in, I would think, a pretty hyper-competitive space.
Yeah. With, you know, we have 38, 39 PhDs here.
Wow.
So, yeah, just within the organization, you've got PhDs going after PhDs because they're sure that their paper's better. I mean, it's just at some point you got to leave your ego at the door.
Yeah. No, and that's hard. You know, it's hard for all of us. But I think
it is.
It goes back, though, to the beginning of this conversation. Like, but if you have a passion for making a fix, which is basically what you guys are really trying to attempt to do, and fix a lot of the bad stuff that's happening with the environment and stuff like that. When you have that, I think it becomes a lot easier to check your ego.
That's true. And we have been making some great progress in that area.
That's awesome.
So that's great.
No, that is great. No, I mean, come on. You need that, right? You definitely need to do that. I guess my last question would be, you know, we talked a lot throughout this about, you know, the amount of tools, the industry, growth, what you look for, passion, all those things. But for yourself, having been in the industry now for a couple decades, how do you keep your hands dirty? Like how do you, you know, feed that beast, if you will, of creativity that sparked and wanted you to get into this whole thing? How do you keep doing that in the face of also having to obviously manage an entire program?
Well, that's, it's funny that you bring that up. So I think within this industry, and we'll go back to the competitiveness of it all, right? Is if somebody breaks into your network or tries to break into your network with a fairly decent attack, you actually, as a cybersecurity expert, want to know everything you can to know about that attack to see if, oh, this guy's got some new attack vector or you know, some new exploit or something that they're working. So we just had an instance on Friday, just a week ago, that somebody, and this is pretty typical MO, right? Friday night at about 6 o'clock, actually it was 6:03 to be exact, we started getting very, very targeted attack on our network. And we picked it up at about 7:30 Friday night. But you could tell what he was doing. 6 o'clock on Friday, everybody goes home. Mm-hmm. He figures that he can start banging on our door and nobody's going to notice it till, you know, a couple of days later, Monday, when we come back in, correct? And as it turns out, this person tried just about every known attack that they could from a particular IP out of Europe. And so we started going through it, and I pulled down all the PCAF files. 30 minutes of attacks, this guy generated almost a gig of PCAP files.
Wow.
He was trying big time.
Wow.
Yeah. 783 megs of PCAP file. And I'm like, wow, dude. But it was, you know, you don't want to say you're excited that this happened, but the reality was we were kind of excited that this happened because it gives you something to start to research and look in and see what he was doing. And,
yeah.
You know, so we, of course, we got FBI involved and they contacted Interpol because of the nature of what we do.
Yeah.
And fortunately, you know, I can say that this individual did not get in, but it was, you know, so I take it as for me to keep my passion going, it's a competitiveness to be better than they are.
Yeah.
And if there's a really cool attack, then you get in there and look around and see if you can learn something from it.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the mindset that you talked about of, you know, I'm running 26 miles versus,
right.
Yeah, I get to run 26 miles.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
No, I love it. I think that's great. Awesome. I appreciate it, even with the weather update that I got from you in Southwest Florida. I still appreciated the time that you spent with us. I know it's super helpful for a lot of folks who listen in and may find themselves in very similar situations or will that you do every single day. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. You have a great day.
Awesome, Jack. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy.